Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Scores.
Yeah, he is special. And you know, Bill, there's something else special here. Hey, who's this big fella?
Hey, I'm sorry to interrupt
David.
Here. Good to see you, Phil.
Good to see you, man.
You betcha. Sorry, man. I was trying to knock on a door back there, but you don't have a door.
Knock it down.
Knock it down. Hey, Coach, yes. For your viewers out there who don't know, I'm David Baker, president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And on behalf of all of those of us who love this game and the Pro Football Hall of Fame, it is my great
this
privilege.
This isn't right that this is happening right now, but...
Okay, never mind.
No, please come back. Come back here, David.
Coach, I want to thank you for all you've done for the game, for all you're going to do for the game. And I want to welcome you to Canton, Ohio, where your bronze your legacy.
Yeah. How about that, Bill? Hey,
congratulations.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
Fantastic stuff over the weekend on CBS with Bill Cowher, the former Steelers coach, getting the news from David Baker. And then we got it again yesterday afternoon when Jimmy Johnson received news on the Fox set. And like Bill Cowher, Jimmy Johnson broke down and cried a little bit. It's good to see guys, these macho guys, break down and cry a little bit. I love it. And with the NFL front and center today, always great talking football with our Monday afternoon quarterback, the 1988 NFL MVP, Mr. Media in the Big Apple, Boomer Esiason with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. Boomer, happy Monday. How are you, man?
Happy Monday, Mac and Chip. Thanks for having me on as always. And I have to tell you, Saturday when that happened with David Baker, when big old David Baker comes walking in the room, everybody knows exactly what it's about. And we all were hoping for Coach Cowher. And I got to tell you, Nate and I were surprised. They didn't tell us. Only Phil and JB knew and a couple other staff members because they had to hide David Baker while we were doing our show. But that moment is just an awesome thing to be a part of. And for somebody that I've worked with for so long, somebody that I admire, respect, and love, to see his emotions come through that way just really made the NFL today come together. And it just kind of shows you what kind of family we have. And for Bill Cowher to be honored in front of all of us and surprised that way was just an amazing, amazing evening.
What did you admire most about Bill when he was coaching the Steelers?
He was a pain in the ass. You know, his defenses were just so intense. His teams were intense. You know, I only really played against them a couple times. And my last year in 97, we were playing a game in Pittsburgh. I was actually the backup to Jeff Blake this day. And we were warming up before the game doing pat and goes where, you know, I would stand in the end zone. Jeff would be on the 50-yard line. And our receivers, running backs, and tight ends would be going down the sideline. I'd lob my long passes to them. And then they would hand the ball to Jeff. Jeff would send the guys down the numbers. They would do the same thing. It's called pat and go. And I noticed that Coach Cowher was standing on our side of the 50 there at Three Rivers Stadium. So I told a couple of the young receivers, go near Coach Cowher because I'm going to try to hit him with the ball. And as he realized what I was doing, he was looking at me and he was yelling at me from the 49-yard line. And I'm yelling back to him, get on your side of the 50. I don't need to stop before the game starts. Little did I know that literally about 6 or 7 years later, 8 years later, I think it was, we were going to end up working together, and we've been together ever since. I admire him as a man. I know why he retired. His wife was sick and wanted to get out of Pittsburgh and needed to take care of her. So he basically put his entire career on hold to take care of his wife, who ultimately died of melanoma. But to see him now and to see how happy he is and to see all the things that he's been through and what he really has meant to football, both as a broadcaster, more importantly, as a coach and a maker of men, and to be rewarded that way is just an awesome, awesome thing to be a part of.
I guess when you think of his career, is there, to me, it's he is kind of the poster child for my generation growing up watching the NFL. He was consistent greatness without a consistent star quarterback. What's your kind of like takeaway of what he is besides a pain in the rear?
Yeah. Early on, that's the way it was for him. You know, he didn't have Ben Roethlisberger until late in his career. And, you know, that's what ultimately propelled him to a Super Bowl. He did have Neil O'Donnell get to the Super Bowl, and they played that great Cowboys team and lost. But his team was always prepared, and there's a culture there in Pittsburgh, which is amazing. That's one of the reasons why, you know, Mike Tomlin still has success, even though they didn't make the playoffs this year. Some would say it was his best coaching year because of the loss of all the great talent that he had, especially on offense. But that culture has been built around running game and defense. It's the old school, tried and true, you know, tested method that is showing itself in this year's playoffs and even last year's playoffs for that matter, that it's not always about throwing the ball, that you still have to be tougher and meaner and bigger and faster and hungrier than the other team. And, you know, coach always says, you know, you got to impose your will on somebody. Well, his Pittsburgh Steelers, for the time that he was there, 90% of the time would impose their will on the opposing team. I will say some of the greatest games that I ever broadcast were the games on Monday night between them and the Baltimore Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
Those games were throwback, in your face, just filthy games. And the teams hated each other. He and Billick hated each other. And I mean, they would just go at it. And it was some of the best games ever, you know, from a football broadcasting standpoint, and I'm sure from a football fan standpoint.
Two franchises historically that like to bully you, and I thought the Ravens, like so many others, would bully the Titans. That's not a bunch to be bullied. My God, what a shocking thrashing Saturday night in Baltimore, Boomer.
You know, like when Mike Ditka was coaching the Bears, the Bears reflected Mike Ditka's personality as kind of how the Titans are with Mike Vrabel. I mean, everything that Vrabel knew as a player and learned as a player underneath Bill Belichick, and then, of course, coaching with Bill O'Brien in Houston, he's taken to Tennessee. You know, and he's not really a hands-on play caller. He's more of a CEO-type guy who's a rah-rah guy, an in-your-face guy, and is still young enough to tell these players, man, we can beat the living crap out of this other team if you guys just believe in yourself. And I think that's what he does. He was an underdog as a player and turned out to be a Super Bowl champion. And that's kind of like the mantra that he's taking right now. So, and he's got a great running back in Derrick Henry, who is hitting his stride in his prime and doing things that nobody's ever done in the playoffs. So here's the other thing I will say about Tennessee. They've allowed the other teams to make the mistakes. They have not made the key mistake in these games that they've played. And Lamar Jackson was just trying to do way too much on Saturday night. He was inaccurate in that first half. He was nervous. He was frustrated. And you could see it on his face, and you could see it how he was carrying himself, as opposed to the way that, say, Patrick Mahomes was carrying himself yesterday in the first quarter when they were down 24-0. No, he was over on the sideline pleading with his teammates, we got this, we got this, we got this. I never saw that from Lamar on Saturday night. It's unfortunate. He's going to be the MVP of the season. I do believe that John Harbaugh is going to be the coach of the year. But unfortunately, they go out in round one for them, their first playoff game.
Is there anything lingering with that with Lamar Jackson that you worry about going forward? Or is that kind of just, all right, first home playoff game, let it get out of the system type of thing?
Actually, a second home playoff game. You know, yeah. He lost to the Chargers last year. So, you know, I just worry about the sustainability of the offense that they're running. You know, and I saw as the season went on, some defenses started to catch up a little bit, and they're going to, you know, catch up again next year. He's going to have to be a better pocket passer. You know, even Deshaun Watson's going to have to be a better pocket passer. Now, no matter how great your athleticism is, and you want to fall back on that athleticism when things start going haywire around you, and then you want to compete at that level, it's great, but it's not sustainable. Physically, they can't do it. I mean, look at Cam Newton, who is much bigger than Lamar is, and really ran a very similar type of offense in a sense that they were actually calling running plays for their 250-pound quarterback. And look at, he's been injured the last couple of years and just is not the same player. So I kind of think the same thing when it comes to Lamar. If they're going to continue to run him and he's going to continue to run the way he does run and not get down, then I do think that it's going to basically be a very short career. So he's got to be better in the pocket. And I think he's just got to be more judicious and don't think that every play has to be made. You can throw the ball away. You can slide and you can do things like that to protect yourself. So he's going into year three, and I think he's going to be a much better quarterback in that regard next year. and only use his abilities when he really truly needs to, much like Russell Wilson does.
As far as the, you know, putting it into historical perspective, the upset, Tennessee beating Baltimore, 10-point underdogs, is since when? When was the last time you saw an upset that surprised you? Maybe you weren't surprised by it, Boomer, but I had to go back at least a dozen years.
Yeah, you know, I was a little surprised, to be honest, because, you know, you just don't know what Baltimore is going to look like. I know how difficult it is to win in Baltimore. It's a very college-like type atmosphere. They were good on defense. You know, when you think about it now, Lamar hadn't played football for 20 days, so he didn't play in Week 17. They rested him, and he didn't play for 20 days. And he's a kid like Mitch Trubisky. You know, I keep going back to this at the beginning of the year. Who the hell is Mitch Trubisky not to play in preseason? He needs as much work as he possibly can get. And to protect him from what? I mean, you know, if he's going to end up playing the way he did at the beginning of the season because he didn't really play in preseason, then what good does that do anybody? So, like, my thought is that the more Lamar Jackson plays, the better he is, and the less he'll press. And, you know, they were out of kilter, out of rhythm. So I'm not so sure that it's that big of an upset, especially when you have a running back doing what Derrick Henry's doing. And, of course, that defense for Tennessee, you know, even though they gave up 530 yards and 92 plays, they only gave up 12 points. And the week before, they pitched a shutout in the second half against the Patriots. I don't think that's going to be the case in the AFC Championship game. It's going to be a much different game going against Kansas City. And, you know, we all saw what we saw yesterday, the best quarterback in football doing his thing and making it look so easy.
One more thing on the Ravens with the fourth and shorts. Are you a fan of the consistently going for it?
I am. You know, this is something that the analytics people will tell you throughout the NFL, that it all depends on where you are in the field, what the situation is. Every game is a little bit different, so sometimes the analytics don't all add up, but you still have those things in the back of your mind, and you should have them in the back of your mind. And then depending on what's going on in the game and how the game is being played, then you make your decisions in that regard. John Harbaugh has been doing this all year long. He's got this superstar quarterback trying to run in between the tackles. The first one, if he just follows his blocker like he should have, which he probably would have done had he had not had a 20-day layoff, it would have been probably a 20-yard gain right over the right tight end. But he decided to try to take it up in the middle where big old Jarrell Casey is and Rashawn Evans, and you're not going to move those guys. And then the second time, they call the quarterback sneak, and I'm not really sure what he tried to do. He tried to go off tackle, and that didn't work. So, again, it comes back to decision-making by the player on the field. The decision by the coach, I think, is right. I think the decision by the player on the field is what cost the Ravens dearly, because he was out of sync and out of rhythm all night long.
Boomer Esiason, CBS, NFL coverage, WFAN New York every Monday with us on the McNeil and Parkin Show. Parkin's off today. Shep is on in relief. Back to your point about Mitch Trubisky. You said, who in the hell is Mitch Trubisky to not play in the preseason? Matt Nagy was in year number two. Do you believe in year three, he would be reckless to do the same thing come August?
I think, you know, and you, Danny, you know this. I've been saying it all year long, especially here the last 6 weeks of the season, that they got to bring somebody in to push Mitch Trubisky. They got to bring somebody in to compete for that job. He doesn't deserve to be the starter, you know, without any competition. I mean, he has done nothing for me, in my eyes anyway, and I'm not in the building, so I don't know how the players are reacting to him or how much they believe in him. I can only go by what I see on the tape and what I see, you know, in games, and I know how the fans feel about him. So there's a lot of pressure on the young man. And, you know, pressure is a privilege, I always say. And the pressure also has to come from within. And I think, you know, you got to force him to know that, you know, if he gets off to a bad start, you're going to have somebody in the wings like a Ryan Tannehill type, like what Mike Vrabel did, because I thought it was the gutsiest call of the year, sitting the number two overall draft pick in Marcus Mariota and bringing in this afterthought, Ryan Tannehill, and letting him lead you all the way to the AFC Championship game. That's exactly what the Bears need to do next year or this coming year. They have got to get somebody in there that is an alternative if Mitch does not get better and doesn't get significantly better.
What kind of odds do you give the Titans to be able to pull off a third straight road upset this week?
You know, they're on a little bit of a roll here. You know, I'll give them a 20%, you know, chance. I think my buddy Frank Reich, the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, took his Indianapolis Colts team in there this year and showed everybody the method for beating Kansas City was to control the football. So if the game clock is running and the down clock is running, you snap the ball under 5 seconds on the down clock every single time you possibly can. You run the ball, you convert third downs, and you essentially are playing defense with your offense. You're controlling the football. And that's what the Colts did when they beat the Chiefs earlier this year. That's what the Houston Texans did in week six when they originally played the first time around. Bill O'Brien didn't allow the game to get into this frenetic, fast-paced game that it turned into this past weekend. So that's what Mike Vrabel is going to have to do. He's going to have to try to do what they did, I believe, in Gillette Stadium. You know, they slowed the game down significantly. He took a minute and 46 seconds off the clock because of the loophole penalty thing outside of 5 minutes. He played field position. His punter, Brett Kern, who's the all-pro punter, had a great game against the Patriots. Didn't play so well against the Baltimore Ravens, but the Baltimore Ravens took two penalties on punts that put them inside their 10-yard line. So they hurt themselves early in that game. But if Brett Kern is on, Derrick Henry is on, then you're playing the field position game and you're playing the soft zone game. And, you know, let them hit as many underneath passes as they possibly can. Fine. You know, Patrick can go 25 for 30 as far as I'm concerned. I just can't let them go 3-4 plays and score. They have to go 12, 14, 16 plays and score and use up as much clock as you possibly can. So Vrabel's got to shorten the game. He's got the ability to do it. He's already done it. And he's got a great running game right now that I think is going to match up well against the Kansas City defense.
Boomer, what's the fair amount of blame that should fall in the lap of Bill O'Brien after blowing that 24-0 lead?
All right. So I argued about this on our show today. You know, the first thing is the 4th-and-1. I believe he wanted to go for it on 4th-and-1 when it was 21-0. He wanted to go for it, and I believe his coaching staff or somebody talked him out of it because they didn't expect to be in that situation where they could go up 24-0. So like I said before, you know, the analytics are great. Go for it on 4th-and-1, fine, assuming you're going to make it. I understand all of that. But when you're in the game, all of a sudden the game kind of changes those analytics because of the way the game's being played and the way it's unfolding in front of you as a coach. So as a coach, you're sitting there going, man, I got to go for this. And I know he went in with the mindset that he's going to have to score 35 or more points to win the football game. But, you know, he got talked out of it. They kicked the field goal. And then all of a sudden you have that great run back by Mecole Hardman. And then before you know it, it's 24-7. And then all hell breaks loose because on the next series, it's a 4th down and about 4, and they fake a field goal on their side of the 50. And I know exactly why he did that, because he knew that the momentum had changed. It was about to become a track meet, which it ultimately became, and he needed to do something to try to change the momentum. And it's just unfortunate his player, Reed, couldn't break a one-on-one tackle from Sorensen. Sorensen did a great job making that tackle, because if he doesn't make that tackle, Reed is 25 yards down the sideline. It's 1st and 10 inside the 20-yard line of the Kansas City Chiefs. And the next thing you know, that you know, you recaptured the momentum. So I didn't expect him to win anyway. And I know he played aggressive or coached aggressively, so I can't kill him for that. And I understand why he did what he did.
Going to the NFC side of things, how do you feel after you see Aaron Rodgers last night? He makes huge throw after huge throw, and kind of the story of his career. We've seen it enough here. What are the Packers' kind of chances of going to San Francisco and be able to steal a win there?
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I know they went there about, 5 or 6 weeks ago and just got absolutely hammered by a healthy San Francisco 49er team, which is what we saw this past week, and this is what the Minnesota Vikings dealt with. I didn't think the Vikings had a chance this week. I picked the 49ers to cover and beat them up pretty good. They only gave up 147 yards. You know, I'm not all that impressed with Green Bay. I think they're a good team. I don't think they're a great team. I think this is a great defensive line for San Francisco. When they are healthy, they stop the run, they get after the quarterback, and he's not going to be able to sit back there like he did against Seattle. Seattle did not have a pass rush. Playing in Lambeau, it's cold. They're used to playing outside on a dry, or not a dry field, but a pretty much a synthetic field without loud crowd noise behind them when they play at home. That's where they're so difficult. So playing at Lambeau, it kind of gives you, a disadvantage if you're Seattle, and they almost won the freaking game. If Turner doesn't drop the ball in the last Seattle series, I think Russell Wilson's going to lead his team to victory. So I think this is not a good matchup for Green Bay, and I like San Francisco to make it all the way to the Super Bowl against Kansas City.
LSU Clemson tonight. Who wins by how much for the investors, and which quarterback will make the better pro?
You know what? I think Trevor Lawrence is going to be a great pro. He would have been the number one overall pick last year. He would have been the number one overall pick this year, and he will be the number one overall pick next year. That's how good Trevor Lawrence is. He is the real deal. Joe Burrow is 23 years old. He's bounced around. He's a great athlete. He's had a phenomenal season. He's going to the Bengals with the first pick in the NFL draft. I'm going with Joe Burrow and the LSU Bayou Bengals. I think they went 34-27, which would tell you that they're going to cover. I think there's more money coming in Clemson here late, so I think the number is actually dropping. So that makes my number look even better. So I like Joe Burrow and the LSU Tigers to take it all the way tonight.
Great stuff. Boomer, thanks a bunch. Always enjoy it. Talk next Monday, man.
Look forward to it, guys. Take it easy, Shep. See you, bud.
We'll see you. That's Boomer Esiason. He is our Monday afternoon quarterback each and every Monday during the football season.
He's the only person that's on board with me around these hallways, at least, with LSU. Everyone else is.
I kind of like LSU. I don't know if you were able to determine that in the email exchange.
Yeah,
this morning.
Kind of going back and forth.
I will not be sporting my nothing like an orange hat and a guy with an orange face.
I didn't know if it's because last time you wore it, you had comments for it.
I'm playing LSU tonight.
I am going to, too.
I may live to regret it, but it will be more fun to be on the right side of an LSU victory tomorrow. If Danny's back to work, I can rub it in his face all day. I don't want to be standing on
Cajun to him.
Yes. I don't want to be standing on shore when the ship is out to sea if Parkins has got a long face because Clemson got popped in the national title game.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that Danny's not here, so we can't play back some of the final word last night that he was a part of. But some of the – I feel like my rebuttal for his Clemson thoughts on why Clemson is going to win would be better than was offered back to him last night. But I'm on board with Clemson – or I'm on board with LSU as well. Yeah. You don't go and you win the Team Offensive Line of the Year award for having a poor offensive line. LSU went and did that. You don't have a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback that sets up historic numbers and maybe the best year ever seen by a collegiate quarterback. You did that this season. Mm-hmm. Oh, and you have – first-round pick after first-round pick after first-round pick in the coming years in the secondary there. Good luck breaking your big plays and your huge plays that Clemson's known for against this defense.
We will kick it around with Teddy Greenstein from the Tribune at around 4 o'clock today. You want to get to us via text message, 670-11 is how you do that. We're on the air until 6 o'clock tonight. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score with Mac and...
You know, they're doing whatever they can to win. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, I guess. So, yeah, they got him a ring. I'm pretty sure that if LA would have gotten a ring and we would have been doing the same thing the same way, we would have been fine with it. I think the past is the past. It happened. People found out. Now let's do something to fix it and keep on going.
That's your new White Sox catcher, Yasmani Grandal, talkative guy on this radio show right after the White Sox signed him to a lucrative deal a couple of months ago now, right here on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's
cheating, not going to get you anywhere.
No, not going to get you anywhere, but I'm pretty sure that there's a lot more teams than just the Houston Astros or Boston Red Sox that are doing it, and that answer that Grandal had for you and Danny Parkins back, whatever it was, 6 weeks, 8 weeks ago, only leads me further to believe that.
Baseball came down hard on the Astros today. It suspended manager A.J. Hinch, GM Jeff Luhnow, for the 2020 season. Also, first and second round draft picks taken away this year and next. And just a little while ago, shortly after the penalties were announced, Astros owner Jim Crane whacked his general manager and his field manager.
Today's a very difficult day for the Houston Astros. MLB did a very thorough investigation, and the Astros fully cooperated. We accept their decisions and findings and penalties. We worked very hard to build this organization for our employees, fans, sponsors, community, and the city to all be proud. With that being said, there's two very important points I want to make today. I have higher standards for the city and the franchise, and I'm going above and beyond MLB's penalty. today, I have made the decision to dismiss A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow. We need to move forward with a clean slate, and the Astros will become stronger, a stronger organization because of this today. You can be confident that we will always do the right thing and will not have this happen again on my watch. Yeah, we didn't really find out about the decision, the final decision, till on the weekend. And after I had their findings, I decided to make that decision today. I think absolutely not. I think, you know, we've had a very good team for a number of years. Before 17, we were turning the corner. 18, 19, we have a very good team on the field this year. You know, I think we'll have a great season. Got a lot of great players still. I don't think it taints it.
That's Jim Crane, the owner of the Houston Astros, acting sort of presidentially, acting very aggressively. You're out the door.
Yeah, you're out the door. Wow. Fires him on the spot. I mean, right there, he gets the announcement or gets the message from Major League Baseball over the weekend. Oh, they're going to be suspended a year. Okay, well, I'm going to fire him then. That's what's going to happen. Not believing, though, that it taints the World Series title in 2017, I have a trouble getting on board so much with that one. You win the World Series, literally in your World Series video, you see your guy with the giant television screen that's barking out and hitting on the garbage can what the signs are that are being stolen.
Yeah.
You can't quite convince me that he's right on all fronts.
This is unprecedented. I've not seen any league come down as hard as Major League Baseball did on the Astros today. I thought it would be a first-round draft pick. I didn't think it would be 2 years of not only a first-round pick but also a second-round pick, and the suspensions of both the GM and the field manager, now who both of whom are gone. That's way tougher, and Joey Cora has got to be a very, very nervous man right now.
Alex Cora, yeah.
Alex Cora.
Joey Cora,
yeah,
might
Joey
have
Cora
to be, too.
Joey Cora's fine, yeah. Joey's good.
I'd always be nervous if I was Joey Cora, though. Smallest guy in the room.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'd just always kind of be nervous, Nelly, if I was Joey Cora. But no, what else is even the suspension for Tom Brady and Deflategate? Would that be on the list of things? Like, all the ones that I can think of are football-related.
I think of suspensions like 4 games, 5 games. Hockey's had multiple games suspended, 40-game suspensions.
Those are for slashing somebody in the back of the head.
But I'm saying for players, for executives, a manager, A.J. Hinch and Luhnow, the GM, to get year suspensions, mm-hmm. That's bringing it. That's communicating a message, and baseball is going to have to change.
Well, and I'm curious of how the Astros are going to be this year too, because obviously it's talented players. What made the Astros so special the last couple of years are, and Spiegel always talks about this, is their ability to hit with two strikes. It's almost like they know what's coming because mm-hmm. they are able to shorten their swings and adjust according. Well, it's almost like they know what's coming because they know what's coming. Take that part of the way out of it, make their strikeout numbers go up significantly, you would think, and all of a sudden are the Astros this special 105-plus win team. Talent is ultimately the most important thing, and they still have a lot of it. But, God, a lot of the self-created good fortune, known as cheating in their case, not so much going to be there.
I suspect change will be affected by pitcher and catcher. I think there will be another way very, very soon for those two particulars to communicate where those signs are not stealable somehow, whether that is electronic or something else. I don't know. Spieg's got into it with us here last week.
Think it's going to turn into the NFL, the headset, 15 seconds and whatever after the pitch clock?
Well, yeah, if you could find a frequency on which people can't intercept those headsets or electronic signals, I don't know. Bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Want your youth hockey team to play in front of thousands? Make it happen with the Chicago Wolves Youth Hockey Program presented by Kia. Go to chicagowolves.com/youthhockey. To learn more, back to NFL playoff action over the weekend. Some fun moments in the broadcast booths, right? Jimmy Johnson being informed by the gigantic man, Mount Bakemore, David Baker, the guy who's the executive director at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You may have seen him Saturday on CBS with Bill Cowher. Well, he was at it on Sunday in the Fox studios as well. And Kurt Menefee was, I think he was a bit put off by Baker coming right up to the, because he kind of grabbed at his hips. It was odd. And he said something. You couldn't make out what it was he said to Baker, but David Baker just continued with his speech. And it was really a tender moment.
Thank you, Coach, for all you've done for the game. Thank you for all you're going to do for the game. Thank you for the history that you've made and the lives that you've impacted. Thank you. It's my great honor to tell you that you're going to be the 328th Hall of Famer into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And your legacy is going to be in Canton, Ohio forever. Congratulations, Coach. Congratulations.
Oh, my God. That is awesome.
The only thing I can think of is all the assistant coaches that have worked for me, all the great players that have played for me, they're the reason I'm here. And they're the reason I can't talk.
All right.
No.
Where's your Bob?
I mean, this is so special to me because when you put in the work that we put in, it's nice to know people appreciate it.
Who was grunting during that soundbite there? Was that David Baker? Was he swallowing or something? I don't know, but that was quite a thing. I wonder if coaches would prefer this happened behind closed doors, or anybody would prefer it wouldn't be on camera like that.
If one of them, I mean, between the two over the weekend, Cowher probably would. But if there's one that would like the camera, it's Jimmy Johnson, right? Always.
I enjoy seeing the human side of a man. I enjoy seeing a grown man in the most macho sport there is, or certainly one of them, show emotion like that. I enjoyed it. And I thought in the case of the Fox telecast last night, it was even more special because they had an insert of Troy Aikman, who was watching at halftime of Packers and Seahawks, and he looked like he was this close to shedding a tear as well. Now
you like it? I like it.
I did like it. I was kind of hoping he would. Actually, I got a little choked up, and I'm not particularly a Cowboys or a Jimmy Johnson fan. I'm just when somebody shows that type of appreciation, it moves me. It was a good moment. It was nice.
Yeah, it was cool to see both of those over the weekend. Now I want that to become the thing, though. I want David Baker to show up, not just at the hotel rooms like he had the Brian Urlacher video a couple of years ago when Urlacher got enshrined in the Hall of Fame and the massive man David Baker's knocking on his door and Urlacher's like looking straight up at him like, okay, well, I'm going to the Hall of Fame. This is cool. I just want like whoever it to be, the next Hall of Fame class, and David Baker shows up at the grocery store and, hey, guy, guess what? It's my honor. Thank you all you've done for the game. Thank you you're going to do for the game. Thank you for this. Going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame as number 387 in this class.
Shep, there's a cottage industry out there for David Baker. He could start making money presenting awards to anybody in the workplace. Just have him show up and he will be the acknowledger guy. He will be the gigantic man who comes into any workplace. I don't care what it is. It could be a law firm. It could be a car dealer's. Doesn't matter. David Baker comes in and approaches an employee who's been doing a nice job, and everybody gets to sit around and cry and celebrate their existence.
Give out your Rod Woodson Award.
Walks into the Dairy Queen. Congratulations, little Joseph. You've done a great job this week. You've run the cash register well. We've seen all of the money be there. You're not pocketing pennies from this. You've been named Employee of the Month.
Couple of other broadcast nuggets worth sharing this weekend. Let's do Chris Myers, shall we? Chris Myers, the sideline reporter. What the hell game was he at?
He was at Green Bay last night.
Green Bay in Seattle last night.
He had OJ's gloves on.
He had an assignment, and I'm not really sure if his broadcast partners were as thrilled with his choice of words as they could have been. Let's find out what he has on the sideline regarding an injury.
On that last series, what do you know, Chris Myers?
Well, at first over on the sideline, we thought it was a muscle pull, but when he came over here, he indicated to his teammates and he was keeled over in pain. I mean, eye-watering pain, and I don't know how you say this on television. Let's just say he got hit in the family jewels, and eventually he walked it off, told him he was okay, grabbed his helmet, wanted to be in on that goal line stand. They said, just wait, he'll be ready for the next defensive series, at least as ready as one can be.
Okay, Chris.
All right, Chris.
Attaboy. Here is Marshawn Lynch.
That was the perfect reaction. Let it breathe for a second. All right, Chris. It sounded so weird from Chris Myers. I don't know why he's such a straight-laced dude.
A lot more button up. Yeah, you wouldn't expect that. I got hit in the midsection.
I don't know how you say this on television. Let's just say he got hit in the family jewels.
Okay, Chris.
All right, Chris.
Yeah, boy.
Don't know how you say it. I got hit in the groin. Got hit. Many ways to say it.
His boss is going to be okay with that, you suppose? Is any reason for a conversation about using the phrase "the family jewels" on network television?
No,
no.
I don't think so. I would hope not.
I don't know. I don't think it's disgusting. I don't think it's dirty. I think it's a little bit base. I think there's another way to say it, to communicate it. It sounded weird. I mean, family jewels coming out of Chris Myers' mouth sounded very, very odd to me. It did.
It definitely did. I also think it probably sounded odd to Chris Myers to say that. I don't know if there's a conversation that needs to be had there.
Of like private Chris, area.
Chris Myers probably like, yeah, I didn't like how that went over. I'm going to make sure to not say family jewels again in front of Joe Buck and Troy Aikman next time somebody gets hit in the balls. Like, probably not a whole lot of conversation to be had.
Yeah, yeah. Hawk Harrelson used to use the family jewels on White Sox television on a regular basis, I'm pretty certain. I don't know. It's just odd in a broadcast.
I thought it was weird. Yeah. I just don't think it. I think it was weird. I think it was odd. And I think Chris Myers probably thought the same thing, and it's probably not going to happen again.
Look at us here. We've spent a couple minutes talking about it. We can't figure out a better way to say it. So I think he did all right in retrospect.
Isn't the groin usually the go-to?
Well, groin is, but it's inaccurate because it doesn't mean your testicles.
Right.
The groin.
Usually that's like the default, though. They'll always say.
It is, and it's wrong. I know. He's got a groin. Oh, yeah. Everybody makes their 10th grade, 10-year-old jokes, not 10th grade. Don't insult a 10th grader.
Keep it to hockey. Lower body.
Yeah, lower body. And a family jewel.
Lower body above the knee.
Tony Romo's going to be the new ESPN guy. Is that right?
They're opening up
Tony
the.
Tony Romo's going to ESPN.
Opening up the bank account to try to.
Whoa!
To try to woe him over.
I did not miss that. Human fire alarm over the weekend.
If you watch a Seahawks game, I had this problem yesterday, I realized, and I had it last weekend as well when they were playing Philadelphia. But any time that Metcalf gets mentioned, whether he makes a play or is just being brought up in conversation,
yes.
do you do the same thing?
Yes. Decaf Metcalf.
Always.
I think my wife and my child, who's only 2 months and 2 weeks old, were ready to kill me by about 7 o'clock last night. Because any time Metcalf got mentioned, it was Decaf Metcalf. And
whoa!
And she has no idea what I'm talking about when I say that.
I drafted him this weekend as Decaf Metcalf.
It's just one of those things that between the four of us on a daily basis, get a laugh out of us and get some smiles. And by about the fourth time I did it, like, am I going to be sleeping on the couch if I keep this up? Like, this really, you don't know what I'm doing here, do you? You're not a big test fan, are you?
For the sake of our marriage, would you please stop saying that? Stop it.
Just shut up already. Okay, I get it.
I got one more broadcast nugget we'll get to in a bit, but we can't get to it right now. You got something you want to share with our listeners,
Nick? I do. This hour on The Score is brought to you by Sunrise Chevrolet in Glendale Heights, the bright way to buy.
LSU is favored tonight over Clemson by 6 to 7 points, depending on which site you're looking at.
They just flashed it up. They have game day going on right now, and their number, I don't know where they're getting it from, but the number they flashed up was down to 5.5.
Oh, 5.5. Okay. Lots of people getting on board with the Tiger paws. We'll get Teddy Greenstein's thoughts on this game in a little bit. It's Mac with Shep sitting in for Parkins on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
It's going to be wild. It's going to be like, I mean, we could have just played in Baton Rouge, but the weather might have been bad. It's going to be like a road game. I know our fans will show up, and they'll be passionate just like they are everywhere we go on the road. But it'll be an awesome, awesome atmosphere.
Born in the bayou. Green's clear water.
Dabo and the Clemson Tigers. Dogs tonight in Nolens. A home game for LSU? I think Clemson will be pretty well represented. I think when Clemson is doing things well, you will know they have fans in the building, right?
Yeah, because
they travel pretty good.
Yeah, especially at this point. The figure last year's national championship games in San Francisco or Santa Clara or wherever it is, the 49ers stadium's actually built in. It's a tough place to get to if you're from Clemson. drive down from Clemson to New Orleans, not that bad.
I have a prediction for you, Shep, okay, about tonight's national championship game. It will set a record for viewership for a college football game.
Do you think so?
I do. I think you have the most attractive pro recruit coming in Joe Burrow, and you have next year's number one in Lawrence, the Clemson quarterback. I don't know how you miss with those two guys.
Yeah,
I just think the nation was titillated over the weekend by pro football. I think this game is going to do a huge number tonight.
I would think so, too. I mean, you have the closest thing to a dynasty right now, 29 straight wins for Clemson. They've been in the college football playoff year after year after year. Another national title appearance for them. So you have that going. You have LSU, which isn't quite on par with the Alabamas or the brand name of that, but it's pretty doggone close. Good track record here since Nick Saban took over that program in the early 2000s. And yeah, I would be surprised if it wasn't, because at least in terms of the ones when they've switched and gone to ESPN, I don't know if those numbers are different from when it was on ABC.
Yeah, it's ESPN tonight, too. It's not on over the air, right?
Correct.
I don't think it's an over-the-air broadcast.
I believe
it's
you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it's ESPN, and then every one of the ESPN family has a different broadcast. You can get the LSU radio feed, the Clemson radio feed. They have the room of people from ESPN employees just hanging out, watching the game. The ACC Network's doing their own special thing. The SEC Network's doing their own LSU-themed thing. So they have like all the different rooms you can bounce around to as well, but they don't, unfortunately, have the coach's room. They used to have the coach's room for the opposing coaches for the two teams, and I thought that I guess it got too out of hand because coaches are sitting there telling you exactly what's going to happen each time, and people lost interest.
If I fail to note which Tigers I'm referring to, the rest of the show pointed out to me, as some of our texters did.
Yeah, you mentioned it.
I said, everybody's jumping on board the Tiger Paw. Both teams are Tiger Paws. You're right about that.
Are they, though? Clemson's helmet is literally a tiger paw.
That's why I said it that way.
LSU's helmet is, you can tell that
it's a tiger.
It's a tiger with the LSU above it.
Do you know the
just
tiger's
sure.
name?
Mike the Tiger.
Mike.
Right. Very you're right.
Big Cat confirms it. Mike the Tiger.
Let me slide in one more piece of NFL audio. Do we have time or should I hold it for later on? Tanny, you tell me. You want to do it? You want to hold it? Okay. I can hold it.
All right.
I'll save the audio as well. It's a carnival of a festival of riches today. We got so much stuff from the NFL games, Oscar nominations. We haven't even talked about those yet. Today's news on the Astros. We have kicked around a little bit, and we'll get back to the title game. Teddy Greenstein covers college football, among other things, for the Chicago Tribune. He's standing by. He's next up on Sports Radio 670, The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.